My name is Daruk Ozgedez. I'm a pediatric surgeon at Yale. Thank you very much for attending this panel. The first thing I wanted to say is the room is very large. Our presenters really want to see your faces. If it's not too hard for you to come towards the front of the room, we'd really appreciate it. This panel was really created to highlight some of the surgical challenges in resource-constrained settings. And also to hear about it from experts who are living and breathing this work every day or are collaborating with our colleagues who are doing so in an effort really to support those of us who are wanting to be more globally engaged clinically. So I'm really grateful to the diverse panelists for joining us today and lending us their expertise. I also wanted to introduce Professor Waters, who many of you may know from Australia, who's had a very long and rich experience developing capacity and building clinical programs in Oceania, and also has worked extensively in Africa, and he's going to be a co-moderator with me. We have a number of presenters and not a lot of time, so I wanted to kind of move ahead and I'm going to introduce our first panelist, Professor Alberto Garcia Marin from the Universidad de Valle in Cali, Colombia, and the Hospital Fundación Valle de Lili in Cali, Colombia, where, of course, there's a high burden of trauma. And he's also very active with the Pan American Trauma Society and really an expert in this area. So we're having some technical difficulties.
Yeah, the pitch is here, but it's not there.
You can come in. We're still waiting for the talk to load up. Sorry, you want to start anyway?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to let Professor start.
Okay. Doctors Ozgedes, Waters, members, and guests. I thank the college for inviting me to this symposium. In the next minutes, I will present some pearls and tricks learned in the last years to simplify the approach of the stable subjects with penetrating trauma. I don't have any disclosure. Cali is an industrial city, the third largest in Colombia. It has about 2.5 million inhabitants with a high level of interpersonal violence. Homicide dropped to less than 50 per 100,000 people in the last 2 years. This city has 2 level 1 trauma centers, which receives 15,000 trauma admissions and about 150 trauma thoracotomies are performed each year. In 1998, we had a homicide rate of 112 per 100,000. In a review of the traumatic deaths of that year, we found that the heart was the second most frequently injured organ, with near 20 heart-related deaths per 100,000 people. In 1993, over a 1 year, there were 637 subjects wounded in their heart in Cali. 254, 40%, died at the scene. Of the 383 who were transported to the hospital, 166 died during the transport, and 217 reached the hospital alive. Finally, 81 of these patients died, resulting in a hospital mortality rate of 37%, but a total mortality of 79%. As a result of the above described violence, Colombia trauma surgeons have a formidable exposure to these injuries, and therefore have an accumulative experience perhaps larger than most other countries in the world. Since 1993, There has been an obligatory health plan system in place in Colombia, devised to extend the coverage to the population. As a result, coverage increased gradually to reach more than 90% in the first 15 years, and from 2011, this number grew to 95%. The proportion of uninsured patients in trauma is higher than in the rest of the population. Additionally, the distribution is not equitable. You can see the proportion of uninsured patients was significantly higher among the subjects treated in public hospitals. This phenomenon generates periods of extreme overload and suboptimal care in public hospitals in our country. In order to rationalize the resources and avoid waste, trauma surgeons in Cali have developed different strategies that resulted in reducing unnecessary tests and intervention. Among them, replacing exploratory thoracotomy with a subxiphoid pericardial window in stable patients with precordial trauma reduced the negative explorations from 58 to 5%. This approach was widely accepted by our trauma surgeons, given the relative simplicity of the technique, the negligible incidence of false negatives, and the low rate of complications. As an example, between 2002 and 2004, 286 patients with penetrating precordial trauma were treated at the University Hospital in Cali. 30% of them were in shock or exhibited tamponade signs. All them were operated on emergently. 183, near the remaining 70%, were studied with a subxiphoid pericardial window, which was positive in 22% of the cases. The table shows the reported series of pericardial window. The positive rates fluctuated between 15 to 30% with a median of 22%. Two contributions of the University Hospital in Cali are highlighted with 21 and 22% positivity. Traditionally, the next logical step after a positive subxiphoid pericardial window has a sternotomy or a thoracotomy. But even in the first descriptions, the authors reported non-therapeutic thoracotomies or sternotomies. Thorson and co-workers from Miami published a series and reviewed the literature, the rate of non-therapeutic interventions fluctuating widely from 5% to 67% with a median of 18%. Remarkably, Navsaria and Nicol from Cape Town reported a series of 21 stable patients with a positive subxiphoid pericardial window. Most of them were treated conservatively. In the first 14 patients, they made a 5 minute pause after draining the pericardial sac to check for stability. Posteriorly, they performed a sternotomy. 10 patients had a pericardial wound or a tangential cardiac wound with a non-therapeutic intervention. Because of that, they treated the next 7 patients with pericardial drainage, lavage, and in none of them they performed a sternotomy. Those patients didn't have complications, and none of them required a posterior intervention. Later, the same group of authors performed a randomized controlled clinical trial. They included 111 stable patients with a positive subxiphoid pericardial window. 56 of them were randomly allocated to pericardial window and drainage, and 55 to sternotomy. In this table, the characteristics of the patients are shown, which you can see are very similar. Here, the surgical findings of the patients with sternotomy. 93% of those patients have trivial lesions of the pericardial sac or tangential wounds of his ventricle. In this table, the complications are shown. Pneumonia was the most frequent complications and occurred in the same proportion of both groups. Atelectasis was more frequent in the patients operated on with sternotomy. The only death in this study corresponded to a patient treated with sternotomy. This most recent data indicates that sternotomy doesn't seem mandatory after a positive pericardial window. Our group in Cali have adopted the management proposed by the South African surgeons. Here you have an example. The surgeon has performed a subxiphoid pericardial window. He is evacuating some clots after initial bloody drainage. After that, the surgeon puts a catheter in the pericardial sac and washes it carefully until getting a crystalline return, always checking the patient's condition is stable. The thoracoscopic approach provides certain advantages. In this case, the surgeon has drained the pericardium and finds a tangential wound of the right ventricle. After making sure there is not profuse bleeding, he proceeds to suture the heart. The possibility of assisting the conservative management with thoracoscopy arose in the discussion of the case with the trauma surgeons group. In this case, the surgeon drains the pericardium, enlarges the wound, and irrigates the surface of the heart. It is clear the existence of a non-bleeding tangential ventricular wound that was left unsutured. This table shows a series collected prospectively at the University Hospital in Cali from November 2016 to December 2017. During this period, 148 stable patients with penetrating pericardial trauma were evaluated and submitted to a pericardial window. In 2/3 of the cases, the procedure was performed by open techniques. In the other third, it was performed by minimally invasive procedures. The window was positive in 22% of the cases. When an open technique was used, only a fourth of the patients finally was managed conservatively. In contrast, when minimally invasive procedures were employed, two-thirds of the patients could be managed conservatively. Only one of the patients treated conservatively had a gunshot wound. Conservative management of patients with traumatic hemopericardium has been reported in 6 series. None of the 87 subjects included had late complications or have required a later sternotomy. But it is possible to go further. This 18-year-old man received a stab wound to the right side of his chest. His hemodynamic condition was stable. A chest tube was inserted to treat a hemothorax. An elevation of the ST segment called the attention of the treating group, and a formal echocardiography was performed. It revealed fluid in the pericardial sac without tamponade signs. The surgical group decided not to operate, taking into account the hemodynamic stability. The patient was observed in the ICU and an ultrasound following was performed. Here, you see the initial ultrasound and the image of the exam of the 6th day. Clearly, there is a decrease in the magnitude of the effusion present. The static images permit to check the reduction for 1.4 centimeters to 0.37. During the first semester of this year, 45 stable patients with penetrating precordial trauma were seen in Fundación Valle del Lili Hospital, the other level 1 trauma center in Cali. 31 had a negative FAST. Of the 14 subjects with a positive FAST, 4 were observed and treated non-operatively. 10 were submitted to a pericardial window, which was positive in 5 cases. One of them was treated conservatively. The non-operatively treated patients, as well as the individual conservatively managed, did not have any complication. After the numbers and the patients I have shown, we can conclude that most of the lesions occurring in stable patients with traumatic hemopericardium are self-limited and possibly non-relevant. Conservative and minimally invasive treatment are feasible and may be a group of patients that can be treated non-operatively. Again, thanks for the podium.